This is really cool because like I was at MindCamp last year and I actually signed up to moderate this session last year, so I'm repeating this year, so we can officially give back, as they say, and reciprocate. And I'm here with Jonathan Frakes, who's leading the next session, so you can stay in your seats and transition right into the domain name session following this session, which is fantastic. And last year we got a lot of people filtering in. It's 5 minutes to two, so we probably should wait a couple minutes. But the way we started last year might be a good way to start is every go around the room and have everybody talk about maybe like what their interest is in search, what they're doing, what their involvement is, and maybe any questions they might have or what they might hope to discuss in a session of this nature. And
well, I'll start off. So I have a startup called Plug here in town, and one of the things that interested me about the session was how can I be smarter about getting folks to find my site and service and like it. So that's my interest.
And what kind of a plug do I know?
It's a podcasting community directory type thing.
Excellent. The community directory meaning podcasting regional content or community or of a certain affinity subject matter.
Well, it's going to end up being both. Initially, we're just trying to use community as a way to help people find podcasts that they're interested in. So the whole notion of saying, "Hey, if you know my friends like this, I might like this," or what do people think about this podcast, or how's it rated? That sort of.
Are you spidering the web to pull in podcast content?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. That's what I read about.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we do that's a little different than other folks is that we actually have like the largest searchable directory right now just simply because we are instead of being submission oriented we crawl.
And are you selling ads on your site? Are you affiliated with any of the YPN or AdSense?
No, we haven't thought about making money yet, but we need to think more about that now.
Well, it's tricky. Yeah. You run into licensing issues. Because of the creative, if they have a non-commercial Creative Commons license, any web crawler.
So, yeah, we got things to figure out.
That's a big issue with Blogger and video and all that right now. A lot of video podcasts are like, hey, you can't repackage and sell my podcast.
Yeah.
But from an advertising standpoint, if you try to monetize by selling, by looking for, first of all, if they're YPN. Affiliated or AdWords, AdSense affiliated, you can run their stuff, or you can invite them into your ad program, right?
Yeah. But right now, we're just getting to the point where people are saying, "Well, you're re-encoding my podcast, turning around, using this content for your site, and then keeping the money."
Oh, I see what you mean. You're talking about embedding the ad, say, within the podcast, or just.
Well, a lot of people are giving away content for free,
right?
If they do it under a non-commercial Creative Commons license, it's a violation of that license to then turn around and use it as a marketing tool for your site, saying we have this podcast, and they'll come to our site, and we get the...
And you know this, Stephen, because you are a podcast producer extraordinaire yourself.
Well, I'm just trying out, but... So I work with Caution Zero Network, and... The elevator pitch is television for the internet. And what makes this interesting right now is affinity-based groups. So people being able to not only get your show, but recommend it to other people, which as far as the technology, well, all the technology that's new, that I think is one of the most critical points. And then secondly, on the creative end, the beginnings of the realization of narrowcasting, where you can go to artists and say, we don't need 10 million people to like your show. We need 500,000.
Super niching, yeah.
Right. We need 500,000 if you figure a way to micropayment monetize, get some ad revenue off of that, then you can pay them. Very narrow, very thin management layer. I think people, when they talk about this, they will use Arrested Development as the touchstone. This is a show with a rabid following, critically acclaimed, canceled because flaming pile of baby heads dating Extreme 2 gets more money.
So as a podcast host, are you expected by your content providers to promote their content from an optimization standpoint or from just running pay-per-click? Or do they expect, if you're hosting their podcast, for your producer? Is it all in-house, or are you hosting?
Oh, yeah. It's
all in-house.
Or we're doing hosting for Libsyn.
And are you are you running pay-per-click advertising? Or?
Yeah, but again, the real strength of the find and recommend is the subscription model. And so that breaks a lot of the current advertising revenue streams because people aren't going to your website to get. I'm subscribed to like 40 different podcasts. I don't go to their site to get them. They show up in iTunes. They show up in Democracy.
They show up on your iPod.
Right. Generally around their release date. Right. So, you know, you're going to have to put the ad.
Right.
When
Steve and I were having an ad hoc conversation before this meeting, we said, why don't you invent a player? And the player actually runs text ads, like subtitled text on the bottom. Doesn't even have, during the, like, product placements during the podcast. So if there's a coffee being brewed in the podcast, that there's a, you know, coffee maker keyword clickable text, hypertext layer at the bottom. Interesting idea.
It's kind of similar. Like that, actually. On the video side, but
you
could probably transfer pretty quickly to audio.
Mm-hmm.
So
you could do both, yeah.
Yeah, like in the video, it's like a hyperlink, so Sarah Jessica Parker's walking through a screen, she's wearing an outfit, and you can mouse over her, and it'll stop the screen. So
are people looking at their player when they're listening to audio?
Pardon?
Are people looking at their player when they're listening to audio?
I don't think people are looking at your player,
Well, I've seen people do similar things with, like, an enhanced audio podcast, right? Like, mm-hmm. You do an audio podcast in that little window on the left side, it says, okay, now you can click on...
Yeah, Real Networks does stuff along those lines, yeah.
Yeah.
Real Player.
Most of the time when I listen to my music or listening to stuff, I don't know, the gym or in the car or someone, but I would always, like, I always kind of want that thing where it's like, remember this, like, I like this song, or, like, tag this somehow, so that... I can come back to it later or get content out of it later or tell me more later.
I actually think this could, you know, whatever they're advertising could actually be useful to me. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to hear a little bit more.
The concept, advertising is too much.
Well, without
booking, we're talking about Kiptronic Kiptronic has an automatic insertion technology that will put an ad on the front end and the back end, 15-second ad, and then and come April, which is this month, the next month, last month, they'll insert one in the middle. But those aren't text based, so I mean they're very intrusive. They interrupt the flow of content. There's some way that you can marry, you know, narrative, text, link, keyword advertising. That would be really, really cool. But let's continue around so we get everybody's interest in search and what they're hoping to learn more about and such.
For LiveJournal, we just recently launched Amazon Ads, and I just want to learn more.
Cool.
I'm Ellie. I've worked for Amazon as a mechanical search project. My personal interest in search is constant ideas I have flowing around my head, and how can I make some profitable search seems like where it's at this point.
Come on in.
Great draw.
Next,
thank you,
gentleman in the doorway there, the gateway.
And I run Startup Little Things Plus, which is mobile media. Publishing network for sharing photos and videos and cell phones.
What was the name again?
Pixpulse.com.
Pixpulse?
So it's mostly girls, 18 to 25. Lots of sporty girls sharing their photos. A lot of heartbroken, but... And I spend thousands on Google AdWords. I spend a lot of money on Yahoo, so what I kind of want to do is learn how to optimize my ads a bit more. Higher PPC rates, higher conversion rates. And also selling AdWords on the website as well. How to monetize my traffic.
So are you competing against graphics downloaders like all the mobile content providers? Is that your
So I guess I'm more like a mobile MySpace.
Okay.
So it's MySpace for a phone.
Okay, cool. Wow. And you're spending thousands, you said, on AdWords, and what kind of ROI are you getting?
I guess my user acquisition or conversion cost is probably 30 to 40 cents per user, which I think is really cheap. And I'm willing to spend up to pretty much a dollar on user conversion. So anything under a dollar, I can do that all day long.
And your average keyword cost per click is what, roughly?
6 cents.
Six? Whoa, that's
awesome. I'm pretty sleazy when it comes to that, yeah.
Jeez.
So I'm really good at that.
So that suggests no competition then.
Right, maybe.
What that tells me is you're going for a really targeted keyword, so I'm getting a lot of traffic.
Right? There's a lot of impressions, and what I do is I just bid 10 cents.
Right.
And really, obviously, you know, have like different campaigns, very targeted AdWords. Don't do any content searching. That's all ClickFunnels, that burns through all your money. And don't micromanage it, manage it every day. And my friend is the founder of a company called CrazyEgg.com. I don't know if you guys heard of that, but what they do is A/B testing on your landing pages. CrazyEgg.com.
Crazy Egg.
It's been on TechCrunch, Mashable. I mean, it's
like Optimost, Offermatic are two of the companies.
Exactly.
It's
like
a high end. Yeah.
Right.
So when you said don't do content search because that's all click fraud and burns through cash, what did you mean by that?
So that on Google AdWords and on Yahoo search engine marketing, there's one thing that you buy ads through searching. So maybe someone searches for cars. So the ads that you see on the right side, that's search ads. Content is maybe cars.com or you know Acura.com if they have some type of ads. That's content.
Content network. Talking about right. syndicated content partners of Google and yeah. If
yeah.
the contextual
so
advertising, this is
the
contextual
network
that he's talking about.
Okay. I get really low conversion rates through content.
Yeah.
I probably pay $3 to $4 per user versus 30 cents.
Could I propose a friendly amendment to this session and move it out here?
Yeah,
this is becoming more widely popular.
Let's move the chairs just outside in the common area there. That'd be good. We were talking about what kind of search campaigns are we all running, what's our budget, what's our high and low cost per click, are we just doing organic, are we doing CPC, and what are the questions that we want to pose to fellow group members. So wherever we left off, or whoever wants to start up again.
We left off over here.
Yes, about PixPulse, so
PixPulse.
Moving up.
Oh, me?
PixPulse to the left.
Okay, I work for Rhapsody.com. I'm the web developer, one of the web developers, so I'm not really all that. We work with Google Analytics and do a lot of SEO, but I'm not exactly sure what our technical numbers are.
I think it's pretty innovative that we've done there is we've gone beyond human readable URLs on our site to human writable URLs. So we've taken the database IDs completely out of our URL structure. And if you want to find the page on Rhapsody about YouTube, it's rhapsody.com/YouTube. You want to find the page about YouTube's album, The Joshua Tree, it's rhapsody.com/YouTube/The Joshua Tree.
Have you been able to measure any real information about that?
We haven't done any, so I can tell you what we know, which is, for a while the site had human writable artist URLs, but not album, and our algorithmic search results for artists were way higher than those for albums. So it seems to be like a pretty big difference.
Is that through a mod rewrite that you're doing that, or are you setting up a static kind of a mirror?
We have our custom J2EE stack that does it for us. And it has to be integrated into the... unless you want to do a redirect on every page that comes in, you have to have it integrated into your application. So when you generate the URLs, you need to generate them as the human writable URLs also.
Do you do misspellings out of
Rhapsody? What's that?
Do you guys do misspellings?
If somebody comes in with a misspelling, we get the search results page, which I think is the right experience. And it's an interesting point of discussion. We return the search results page as a 200 code, not a 404. And that's been a point of debate internally, but I can see arguments both ways.
It seems like the margins are so low on individual song titles that, I mean, with what you guys pay the labels and then pay yourselves, I mean, to be able to buy a popular artist term for under 25 cents or even under 10 cents, it's out of reach for you. And pay-per-click is sort of not in the business model for you, unfortunately. So it's all organic, basically.
You might be surprised how much we're willing to pay for.
You get subscription $9.95 a month too, right? Just beyond that, but most titles, it's difficult to find that pay-per-click because it's not really a category. But, I mean, the engines haven't really modified their pricing schedule yet.
Yeah.
So
my name's Jonathan Freaks, and I just did actually a conference locally on domain names 2 weeks ago in Bellevue called the Domain Roundtable, and we had a big section on targeting terms, and I love learning more about this. When, you know, nobody can say that they're an expert, but I certainly hear a lot of wisdom in this meeting. You know, where what I'm looking to hear in this group, I guess, I do a lot with domains, and so domains versus subdirectories on websites and what people have had as success or failure. Like you were mentioning rhapsody.com/U2. Have you done any experimentation with U2.rhapsody.com? Right, and seeing any empirical results to show that one's better or worse than the other?
We haven't experimented. We thought about it. I have one piece of information to share. I was able to do a call with a Google engineer probably a year and a half ago, and basically was able to get access to ask some pretty direct questions and get answers from him. And I asked him a specific question around, you know, index. Pardon me?
He didn't shoot you before you left.
No, okay. He's on the phone, so I made sure that. But I asked him that exact question about directory names. Is it a factor in relevance or indexing? And he said flat out no. Top level domains, yes. They have some factor, but whether it gets, you know, indexed or not, but
actually,
with relevance.
That's not entirely true because Chris's Gotta.be search service got banned from Google for using subdomains versus using
subdirectories. Well, that's maybe a separate issue, but I mean, this is just
it's a term of service issue in terms of Google looks at those as being spam and URLs.
I think they do, and there's a limited amount of content, so it's gotta be, if you're using a subdomain merely as sort of a tactical step for just like one landing page versus having enough content to really justify a subdomain. Like if you're a site that has four language versions and you can do, you know, rather, a lot of companies are doing subdomains for France, England, Spain, rather than doing separate websites. But if you're just using that subdomain, so I think it has everything to do with the volume of content.
Talking about positive effect. Yeah, so if you do, you know, perhaps whatever WAC, ID, whatever, and that's it, that's your baseline. If you put keywords in the directory structure, that's not going to buy you anything. But if you have a bunch of separators with hyphens and underscores and all that stuff, you may then get not indexed. So you're right, there can be a negative effect of that.
Well, actually, to build on what you said, they actually determine words side by side as being, they diminish you by adjacency. So if you had, you know, spam, 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 they're going to drop you down in the listings on spam and block you out. But they have apparently a blessed list of TLDs, so if you start to work with subdomains, they have to go through this as well. So one thing that came up in the conference was people buying fleets of keywords as domain names and using it for direct navigation search. So if you take, and let's say you're in the travel industry and you buy like seattletravel.com or seattlesbesttravel.com, et cetera, and buying like a ton of different keywords, putting different relevant content behind that to build up your search rankings for one ultimate destination page. Because point of entry. But the thing that came up was there's
so
a new top level domain.
Are you saying that that's a problem or is that something that's...
No, it's actually a trend and it's actually becoming more popular and actually helps your results and improves your results.
But I might say it downgrades results on the pages, right? On the index. You, like the entire page is like Seattle Travel Destination, Seattle Hotel Destination, you know, the same thing kind of repeated over and over.
Yeah,
from a user perspective.
If you have junk on the page that's basically handy for the search engine to rank you better, and they do, nature has a way of working itself out with that. I mean, they are going through and fixing it.
It'd also be interesting to see whether the domain name is working because it's being repeated in the title tag, like, or they could do independent variable testing on, like, if you just hit the name, like, we have a client, Seattle Personal Injury, well, they're in the personal injury law space, and their base competitor is Seattle Personal Injury Law. Now, when people type that in, is that because they're nailing the domain name or because Seattle Personal Injury Law is repeated in the title tag? And the title tag, as we know, is sort of omnipotent and, you know, all-powerful, so... Interesting. Moving right along. Would you like to talk about what you're doing in search and maybe what questions you have? And
I'm not particularly doing anything in search. I work for Singular Mobile Space. We're launching a social networking product. So nothing particularly in search.
Anybody know?
A few months ago, Chuck and I started BillMonk.com. And we are actively trying to get more and more traffic to our site. And so we'd love to learn more about search engine optimization. We've actually done very little with search engine.
If I can jump in too. We're also thinking about in the long term possibly being a feeder for demographic information because for our users, we can be extremely targeted in the ads because we know not just keywords. We actually know what you've been buying, how much you're spending, how many friends you have, what stuff you own.
Where you live.
Where you live, your gender and your age. So we can get kind of targeted if we come to that stage.
Yeah, and so alternatives, I guess that's the revenue side, alternatives to Google AdWords, that because we have such a targeted demographic, that would be also interesting.
That's great. And you guys are in a very unique category too. So, like, how would you describe in a keyword or two or three what you do? Have you thought about that?
Borrowing and lending.
Borrowing, which could be banks, SNL. So.
That's true.
Personal friend.
I guess the thing that the
roommate
flatmate
IOU are our biggest keywords for search.
What was it?
Roommate flatmate IOU.
Yeah. In fact, roommates are a big market, so we want to hit them.
Cool. Stephen, we talked to you and.
John Schwartz, I'm interested in organic SEO is what I've done so far. We have no marketing or sales budget, so organic is all we get. But we're working on getting budget, so I'm interested in hearing about cost per click and things like that that you all do.
We have an MSN product manager or ad center represented right to my left, so she'd be happy to tell us about her program. Anyone here from Google or Yahoo? Well, this is Seattle, you can answer their question. Well, we'll be coming to you in just a second. So. Anybody, your gentleman to the right?
I'm mostly just here to observe what they...
I don't really have anything to talk about yet.
Okay.
That's been a privilege on SEO and a little bit on SEM, but...
For what
company? Microsoft Windows Live, or Microsoft MSN Shopping, our name game is tough these days. So a large, very large dynamic website, so changes have big effects. So I'm interested in both SEO and SEM.
Are you applying to us?
Pardon me?
Are you applying to us?
Huh?
No.
I hope so.
I run a local real estate blog here in Seattle, Rain City Guide. I refuse to spend any money on marketing. This past year, I've done everything organically, and we show up real well on pretty darn competitive space in terms of Seattle real estate. I've managed to do a lot in just pumping out content and lots of links and figuring that the kind of more organic side of linking out. So,
Care a lot of people linking to you?
I'm sure that's piqued a lot of people's interest. Care to share some of your, what you've done that's successful in it, or a secret?
For me, the
we don't have any other real estate sites here, right?
Well, I'll give the reality is I actually got
hired. It's all love.
I just accepted a job offer in California anyway, so I can
spill the beans.
I can spill some beans here with Seattle. No, the main trick for in the real estate, I kind of was fortunate to go into the real estate field in my site because they're very insular and they don't link out to anybody in general, the websites that are out there. So they like to kind of capture their clients and whatnot. And by doing the blogging thing and really linking out to a lot of sites across the country, I built up a lot of goodwill. So I would say my almost, contrary logic to building up really good SEO was to link out to a bunch of good sites. And internally, I built up a lot of goodwill by doing that. And I've gotten a lot of really good links in, and in particular from other people even who are at this conference, I've had links to my site. And from a tech crowd, there's not a lot of real estate sites that are ranked really high. So when I get a link in from somebody even that's with a page rank of 6 or 7, I can beat out most of the local real estate sites because they're never going to get that. So especially other agent sites.
And
so
your page rank is?
We're only at 5 right now on our homepage. Not even particularly high, but it's...
How many pages are you talking about?
On the blog? What do you mean? Because the blog
content-wise, it's just a blog. Wow.
It's just a blog.
And you're beating out all the real estate in Seattle, all the real estate agencies, and
only a year old, and we're on the front page. We definitely get more Google search hits than any other real estate site in Seattle. But the main, let's say you type just Seattle real estate, we're number 5 right now. So we're
sure you don't have
6.
Personalized search turned on.
So I know what you're saying. If you turn it on, I'm number 4 or 5.
It's
or something.
GeoIP specific.
No, but I was going to say, but if you turn off that and you just, we get a lot more hits on obscure things like King County appreciation rates or looking to sell my home in Ballard or these type of things. So our hits, the main, like I'd say, top 10 search results or search terms represent definitely less than 10% of our Google searches.
And how's your conversion off of those? Because, you know, organically, you're going to match those bottom-up terms, those specialty terms that you're probably not going to even think of to buy for pay-per-click. But the question is, you can't control the landing page when people come in.
Nope.
Like, you can't. And so the conversion, you can't make an offer, I mean, per se. And the conversion's generally
And so our monetary, our way we monetize it is different. That's probably the trickiest thing. That I have an advantage in real estate that what we do is my wife is an agent. She gets a commission, or she gets a percent of the commission for all of her referrals. So when we say, when somebody comes and says, I want to get an agent, she sends them to the most appropriate agent, and we get 25% of that commission fee. So I don't even bother doing ads.
Good.
I mean, that right there is, I tried ads for a month. Those commission, one commission fee is 10 times more than an ad. So I don't even have to bother doing monetizing it or even following exactly how it gets monetized, because we monetize it through referral fees.
Well, but if you have a cost per acquisition and you know that you can flip it for a profit, then don't you know that we can spend X amount on keyword advertising and still make a profit?
It probably would have. Necessarily. I've been so cheap the whole time, I've never wanted to spend a penny. The next thing I don't want to spend any money on it. You know, I host it on a, I get somebody to host
You're
it
thinking
for me.
Like a PPC, but marketing
a year.
Like organic.
That's
yeah,
it.
Right.
Everything
right.
else is 100% organic. If I have to start spending money, I've never even had to go there. We've made enough money off the site not doing that. So just another way to look at it.
Real estate is one of the most competitive categories, without question.
And that's why. So we
I don't even see how it would be. The real estate market is so hot that it's so difficult to find for Google to be relevant.
So
exactly.
Interesting, like if you go to Google right now, a month ago I set up a wiki on the site, and one of the things, I just set up a real estate directory where anybody can list themselves. But if you just typed in national real estate blogs, I think we're number two right now in less than a month on Google, because we've built up this kind of goodwill with real estate related terms that that's my preference, is to build up the content and the good stuff there. So.
And what's your blog authoring tool that you're using?
WordPress.
It's WordPress.
Open source,
good,
free.
Good things, yeah.
You know, everything, you're talking about URLs being, you know, name friendly, that's all automated. I don't have to set anything up, it does it all for me.
Real estate.
Two more insights. One is that the real estate industry is extraordinarily competitive and everyone's paying tons of money to optimize, but no one puts, there's nothing that you ever want to bookmark on any real estate site out there. Like, have you ever been to a Windermere page and gone, well, shit, I'm going to send this to 10 other people? No, but Dustin's site there, you know, if somebody puts up an article that says, like, your agent should cost 1%. If you're doing X, Y, and Z, and you're like, whoa, I'm going to bookmark that and I'll blog about it. So he has content where no one else, in an industry where no one else has content.
Yeah, and he has personality in the industry where most people don't have personality.
Exactly. And then also, can I share the
secret?
You just
told
me
affiliates
over
here. He's actually an author on the site. He's speaking to somebody, one of the contributors on the site.
I'm a contributor.
He's got a lot of contributors.
So the other thing is Dustin spends a lot of time commenting on other blogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he does not, you know, there's all no follow lead tags, but I'll tell you, when people comment on his blog and I read an interesting comment, I'm like, I click on their name and I go to their site, and then, you know, 2 days later, I'm like, oh, that's something interesting. I'll blog about their blog. And
well, that's so telling for organic, because a blog is about text, it's about content, whereas a lot of real estate sites just have links to MLS systems and like database backends that are all, you know, CGI driven, and they're not bookmarkable anyway, and they're out of date 2 days later. So.
And so we've tried, one of the things I think we've done to build to get the tech crowd in there as well is we have this search that some other guy built for me, to be honest, for free. He just wanted the marketing of it. And it's great. It's got a Google Earth, all Seattle real estate MLS. You can look over Google Earth. It's got all RSS feeds. If you want to get a feed of any, you know, whatever your search is, you can get an RSS feed of that anytime it gets updated. It's got all these things. So we kind of have some unique tech content, which helps get kind of good links in as well, I would say, that other sites don't. That, again, I refuse to pay for anything, so it's been pretty nice.
But do you have a formal link building program, or are you just going out and commenting on other people's blogs?
I think that the link directories, my impression, and I could be wrong, I focus a lot on the Google SEO. I think Google's trying their best to make those things irrelevant. Like they want good content, and if you're paying a lot in directories, so I don't even want to bother getting myself in link directories. I did the first month, I got myself on a couple, and I realized, well, this is a great waste of time, and I haven't ever bothered to go do that again. I'd rather get good, deep links from other
bloggers. Well, and just to clarify for people that are saying, well, I shouldn't waste my time building links, because that's really not true.
No, I'm not saying
there's a difference between link directories and paid, you know, link farms and things to be avoided, especially low page rank destinations. You don't want to link to low value real estate. Then creating links within your circle of friends and influence, so the people that you're doing business with, vendors, clients, associates, community associations, .edu is very strong, right? Links from educational institutions, .gov, pretty strong. And there's a huge difference there in at least harvesting what are in your circle of influence, and if you don't have at least that many links.
I would 100%. I don't think that links are valuable. It's just that I want those more organic links.
No question. Yeah. So the other thing that's really strange about links, and I got a great tip that I'm happy to share with you guys, is if you notice, if you try to check link back on Google or Yahoo, it's very difficult. Not only don't they give you an accurate count, but they're not giving you credit for a lot of times for all the links that you know you have. You're not really getting credit. Bruce Clay has this tool called Link Mapping. It's a really ingenious tool. You can actually, the way it works is you actually create web pages that actually have the links of that people that are linking to you. So when, let's say from a Yahoo link back analysis, and then when Google comes in, they spider all the links that Yahoo says you have. Yahoo spiders all the links that Google says you have, and you kind of even it out. So because if you split the difference, you can get credit overnight for hundreds of links or dozens of links that one engine said that you had and another engine didn't, just by putting those links on a page where they can be scanned, it's a great tool, and it's like, I think it's $40 a quarter or something. Like, you can also do it yourself, but they automate the whole process and kind of divide up the links into different pages and publish the whole thing for you. So it's a great Bruce Clay tool, which is a great resource. So moving right along, anybody want to talk about their programs or questions? Okay.
My name is Alexei White. I work for
EBA. Speak up.
My name is Alexei White. I work for EBA, so like we make Ajax software components and stuff. So it's like very niche, very like narrow kind of market. And, we've found that pay-per-click really eats away our margins, like almost too much. So we pursued like a lot of organic stuff and had some success, I feel, with blogs, just like having our employees blog about our subject matter. So it's like content. And then sort of keeping those blogs on kind of branded but not like really super corporate kind of templated blogs that are sort of peripheral to our site actually helps. And also we maintain like a portal that makes content and stuff on the subject matter and indirectly get links in that way.
So when you say eats away at your margins, are you noticing that the keyword prices are pretty high in that category of software?
That's right. Like if you look at like our conversions, like we have, because we're software products, right, we have trial conversions and then for sales conversions, right? So look at all those levers and what those ratios are. It really doesn't make sense to do that for a lot of important keywords.
You offer a free trial, then talking about uptake from that point forward.
Yeah, but the content model seems kind of weird. Sometimes I feel like we're running a magazine, like writing all these articles and stuff. It's actually been really effective in generating traffic and also generating mindshare. So.
I want to know, like, you said blog about your content. What? Since you're an Ajax niche, what do you blog about? Like, what's an example?
We blog about development techniques. So we get into our sales leads come from developers. So we blog about stuff that's of interest to them, not necessarily about products.
Like an example would be.
Okay, so Ajax is a web paradigm web development technology. So how do I get drag and drop to work in Mozilla? Or like, how do I?
Okay.
I'm having trouble with XSL transforms. We tried this. We had all this problem this weekend solving this problem. And here's the solution.
Okay.
And hey, A tags are really slow. Put a lot of them on the page. So these kinds of tips actually get picked up like really quick, and then people become aware. And I guess we get PageRank value from that. We also did this thing recently. It's kind of a pilot project with, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Macromedia Labs, their lab site. We started something like Labs for our company. And it's like the prototype product, early alpha. Hey, we just did this thing this weekend. We're gonna throw it up on our lab site, and it's really like kind of cheesy, like not super polished stuff, but it's like has a higher page rank than our corporate site. And it's like people are commenting on it like all the time. People come in through that portal like crazy.
It's the whole like people like feeling they're part of the product. They get it so early.
They feel involved. They feel like they feel like they're participating in the process. It takes a lot of that. Yeah.
Anybody else who hasn't yet talked about their search marketing program?
Yeah. I'll just say a couple of I work for HelpShare.com, which is a question and answer marketplace. One of the big decisions we made in the last year was to open up our knowledge base of all the questions and answers that have been transacted in the past. It's closed because it's a per-pay system. It was kind of a philosophical shift
to decide if someone paid $20 for an answer, do they own that answer, or should we let it go as public knowledge? And ultimately, we found that our answerers were just happy enough to, you know, cut and paste the answer and customize it to the next person. And everybody has a more specific question to ask, and so you know, it's worked quite well. So that's the search strategy. And I also have a social bookmarking site called Bookmarks, where the Google Ads are the only source of revenue. It's very small right now, but that's been very interesting to see the interaction of the tagging directly related to the keywords that come in on the organic results.
And do you link back to the people that make give advice and make recommendations to their site as a
Yeah, user? You can fill out your expert profile, so people will put in their blogs and homepages there. And so that, in that way, it's
connect incentive for them
back
to be
to build a profile
give,
and contribute.
Advice. Yeah.
What I'm working on today is defining an API so that the questions and answers come in and out much more easily, so that you can then post a question on your blog or get answers back to your blog or any permutations.
Speaking about like these metrics and looking, is anybody here using like Google Street Tool, which formerly Urchin, now Google Analytics, or any other analytics program, and looking at KPIs, key performance indicators, which is really ought to be the backbone of search. I mean, we need to know, you know, why we're doing this. You know, what pages are converting. You know, what it's worth. Does anybody want to talk about any analytics the software they're using or not using?
We use Hitbox.
What?
Hitbox.
Okay.
Mainly Google Analytics.
Google doesn't, GA doesn't scale for you, you find?
Not yet.
The problem I had with Google Analytics was it was slowing down page load times, like really slow. It hits a server or something at the top of every page, and man, it was killing it.
Synchronously?
It makes a call to a remote JavaScript, I think, is how
it works. And so I threw mine in my footer. I use Google Analytics. And it definitely, you know, the page goes to load, and then luckily for me, if you throw it in the footer, it doesn't finish loading till the end of the page.
Right.
And if somebody goes real quick on and off the page, obviously that script never gets called.
That's right.
That's a great idea.
So you miss that. But
that's a great idea.
You know, I don't really care, but I do use it. And it's for blogging, it's not very useful because I want to know what referrals are coming quickly. Like, I like to know who Googers came the last couple of minutes or last hour or last day. And Google Analytics only refreshes itself once a day. So
great
for quick stuff, it's great for really in-depth, but not very useful for...
We take a very, very small percentage of our traffic in Subject Error.
Okay.
Because they can't handle our traffic either. We also use a C tool called Visitors, which takes an Apache log stream in real time. And again, we take a very small part of that and throw away and look at the data coming in the last 10 minutes or the last half an hour.
And what was that called?
It's called Visitors. It keeps no state, so basically you give it a stream and it analyzes the stream in real time and throws the data away. And it's pretty damn useful when you're dealing with low data. And it doesn't use that much as a resource.
Does anybody here use Mint? Mintrox,
have a Mint.
Yeah. It's really cool for blog. So it installs on your web server. It's a PHP app written by Sean Inman. And it gives you all the important stats right away.
Yep. So, yeah, I use a different one. It's map stats, which is fun. You can see it on a map, too, where they're coming from. It's I don't get that many hits, to be honest with you, on the site. So I can take I'm sure it wouldn't load, you know, 100,000 hits a day or anything. But I'm nowhere near that, so almost any.
So what kind of metrics are we all paying attention to? What kind of KPIs are we paying attention to? Are we looking at page views? Are we looking at, repeat visitation, unique visitors, demographic, anybody tracking anything interesting?
I just look where people come from, what sites come from.
Geographically?
Yeah.
And site-wise?
Yeah, just mostly what site they come from, I guess.
Yeah, which isn't really a performance indicator per se, but it's traffic.
Cool.
Yeah. Great book. Eric T. Peterson just came out with a book called The Big Book of KPIs. He wrote Web Measurement Hacks for O'Reilly. And which is kind of the great, awesome book, Web Measurement Hacks. And he's the former, he's been a webmaster with everybody from Web Trends to Visual Sciences, I think it's called. But we just learned about, Jason Burby at Zaz told me about the Big Book of KPI, and
It's a great book, and it's, you get it off his website. And he also gives you a spreadsheet, which is like a free, I mean, an add-on. It's a 2 or 3 page spreadsheet and a whole list of KPIs, because it's amazing what you can be tracking and what's really worth paying attention to, you know, and what's not, I guess. Because that's really the name of the game.
Two other blog-oriented analytics tools. One is MeasureMap, which was also recently bought by Google.
Started by Adaptive Path, though.
Yeah, built by Adaptive Path, and it's still not there. I use it on both, when I use it on the Radar blog, and then I use it on my personal blog, and when you try to go to the site, it crashes. But what I find, I don't have any issue with page loads, but what I do find useful is they have RSS feeds. So I don't have to go to the site to actually get the data. And they send me a dashboard feed every day. They send me popular posts every day. And they send me top 5 links. And so it's really quick. I basically, again in the morning, I hit refresh, and then boom. And if I wanted to check real time, I can risk it. But like I said, the site itself is not doing all that super great. Now the other like blog analytics app that I just saw demoed a couple weeks ago is LogLog. Now I personally haven't played with it, but they have heavy maps integration. And it's another Ruby on Rails app. So they actually, when you're viewing your site, you can see like where it's coming from where, and then you can actually like click on the little Google icon and see the IP address and whatnot as you're visiting.
I think MeasureMap does that too, like where you can click on the world, see the country or people.
Yes, yeah, they have their own map as well. But this seems to be, so whereas MeasureMap, I feel MeasureMap is like a really rich interface. And in some ways it's kind of confusing, but it's very beautiful, every page that you're on. This is kind of ugly, and like that's their main feature. So that's why.
Brady, can you give an example of like how you've taken and like a data point in analytics and then like applied it to your website? Because the thing is, a lot of people think, well, if I have an analytics program, like, that does it for me, but they forget that if you don't actually use the data to actually make changes to the website on a regular basis, that it's sort of useless. I mean, that it's pure research and research only. So has anybody picked up any data that they've actually like incorporated as a test and can tell us about that?
Well, we've started doing a series of posts on Radar. And so we just noticed that those do really well. So we increased those. We saw him just as a database story for a series of 5 posts that were incredibly successful. So we plan on
more
continuing
posts,
those.
More popular.
Yeah, series.
A series of posts. Anybody else?
We
keep track of like where people drop off in flows.
Exit pages?
And yeah, and then just like every time we do UI changes, either do it for a subset of the population, or we keep track of the changes and the post numbers.
Anybody doing exit surveys here or entrance surveys? Any people? Why are you leaving our website?
So we launched ads, and launching ads in LJ was a pretty big deal because for the longest time there was an implicit promise that we would never have ads. So it's completely opt-in, which is quite interesting for advertisers because actually everyone that has ads in LJ has chosen to receive those ads. In the first week, we had exit interviews for people switching back and forward so we could track why people didn't want to stay in those ads. So we do that sometimes. But okay. We've found the surveys generally don't actually tell us anything.
Right. They do generate a lot of data, though.
Yeah, but it's...
It may or may not be useful.
It's very flawed data because most people don't bother.
Yes,
the same people who will write you emails are the same people who write the surveys.
No, a good piece of advice is like to ask like 1 or 2 questions, like have an issue, like if a hypothesis about maybe why people are leaving, or maybe one suggestion. Because if you ask them for like 4 or 5 things, it's really hard to. It just gives you so much more of a avalanche of data. It's really hard to even interpret what it is that you're getting. You know, you're